Just switch to just
51 seconds.
Ernie's taking over first chair.
I'm going to finish this subject.
That was probably good.
Okay, for everybody's information, I'm going to finish this topic up, and then Chairman Brady will resume chairmanship of the meeting for the rest of the meeting. So we're up to public questions. Is there any member of the public that has a question? Please step up to the microphone, identify yourself, and ask your question.
Ty Bolter, UWC. My question is if I can get Todd's variance for his rifle tag and hunt on his property down there. Might be okay? No.
I'll defer that to the variance committee.
Okay. Kevin, in his presentation there, showed that once-in-a-lifetime and limited entry tags are capped at 8. There was also a percentage in the language as well, right? 5%?
5%.
Not to exceed 5%?
Yeah, the way the rule read up to this point was a maximum of 5% or 8, whichever is less.
Okay, and then you alluded to moose tags. If I remember correctly, we gave out 30% of moose tags of the conservation permit program last year.
By the end of the three-year cycle, it may have come out to about that percentage because, like I said, those were calculated based on higher permit numbers that happened when we 3 years prior to that. So.
Okay, and then Mr. Baer was asking about once in a lifetime versus limited entry. Why we aren't doing that? Obviously, you went into why. What are our projected elk cuts or elk tag cuts for the coming years because of the age objective adjustment?
You know, we've been in a steady growth mode. Mm-hmm. Eventually, that's gonna plateau and some may drop. Whether that happens in this next 3 year period. It's hard to say, but we're getting to that level on some. I can't give you a number, Todd, but we're getting to the point where we are going to start plateauing and maybe reducing some limited entry elk tags or number of tags on some units.
Okay, I've had some discussion with several people. Is it inaccurate to say that we might see about 10%, maybe in the next 3 to 5 years?
I don't know, Anise, do you want to comment on that?
So our projected number of limited entry bull elk tags, given we're at objective on every unit, is between 2,400 and 2,500 permits. So that's about 500 permits fewer than we have now.
Okay, so if we adopt the rule as presented that doesn't affect limited entry tags, we mm-hmm. will see roughly a 500 permit reduction with the public, but none to the conservation permit program.
Well, this isn't in the next 3 years. This is probably once every unit comes to objective, which could happen in the next 5 to 10 years on some units. I mean, on some of them, yeah, we're almost there. On some of them, it's going to take a little longer. And really, the ones that have more elk, it's going to take longer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to be that steep of a decline in the next 3 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any further questions from the public? Questions from the board members. Jake.
Good morning, Kevin.
Morning, Jake.
Other than some of the things that you described in your presentation this morning, what else can that money be used for? Can it be used for example, purchasing of properties or anything like that?
You know, I'll ask Alan for some clarification and some history on this. I think we have used that in the past for some of those things, but the vast majority of it goes to habitat projects. It's probably the majority of it in any year goes to supporting the Watershed Restoration Initiative, and then there's a lesser percentage that goes to some research projects.
It's possible in the 7 years that Jim's been director, no property's been purchased with that money, Jake, so it's entirely kind of used for habitat in a different way. So it could be there's a very complicated state process to purchase property anyway, and most purchases never make it through that process. But is it possible? Yes, it has not been done in the last 7 years.
I got a question for you. What do we get as far as matching funds from the feds? Do we get any matching funds for this money?
Yeah, we use this to generate as seed money for a lot. I mentioned in the last, let me go back to So since the watershed initiative...
Kevin Tyler's back there if you want to...
Well, since the Watershed Initiative, it started, you know, in full force in about 2005. We've raised about $19 million since 2005. The Watershed Restoration Initiative has accomplished, I think, $60 million, Tyler? About $75 million in projects during that time. Like I said, these don't completely fund that by any means, but it works as seed money that we then leverage through lots of other partners to get work done.
That's a lot of money, man.
A lot of money.
No wonder Alan's driving a new car.
Further questions?
I live by Alan. I can tell you he's not. So.
It stays at home. Bill?
Kevin, has any of the money ever been used to retire grazing permits in areas where you want to put bighorn sheep, for example, with domestic sheep?
Again, I'll defer to Alan on some of those history questions.
It was historically. Some of it's been used. Usually it's not retirements, it's conversions. I'm not aware of any retirements, but there are conversions that were made where a grazer decided to graze cattle in place of, let's say, domestic sheep, and in that case there was something done there. So that would kind of be the more common practice. They're not done by the division. In those cases, those types of negotiations and discussions are done between conservation groups and the grazer. So we stay out of those.
But that money is used in that process?
Has been used, yeah. Not a lot more recently, but probably historically when the Bighorn Sheep Program was first starting, there probably was more of that than now.
John?
One more question. In the central region, there was quite a bit of discussion about the sheep program and how this would affect the sheep program if we adopted anything that was to take even a couple of permits away, the money that would cost the sheep program. Can somebody give me an idea how much the budget for the sheep program is and what that effect
might
be?
Based on 2011, there were six desert bighorn sheep permits and four Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep permits in the conservation permit program. The desert sheep tags sold for an average of $44,000, and the Rocky Mountain sheep tags sold for an average of $55,000. So one tag reduction means that amount out of that program. And that's it. Those are high maintenance programs. We fly them every year. That's probably one of the largest expenses is the helicopter time to get flights in on all those units, to which then we generate our recommendations.
If we was to take $100,000 away from that program, I mean, are we taking a third of the money? Are we taking a fifth of the money it takes to fund your sheep program in a year? I mean, what kind of effect are we talking?
As Kevin mentioned, most of the money is for flights, and so yeah, it's roughly about 100 would be more than half of what we use.
Okay.
What do you pay for helicopter time nowadays?
Oh, it's close to $1,000 an hour. Yeah.
Further questions? Let's take the RAC chair inputs then. We'll start with the southern region. Mr. Flinders.
Mr. Chair, this passed unanimously in the southern region. It was later in the agenda. Not a lot of discussion.
Darris?
Southeast region also passed this unanimously. It was pretty obvious that it was good for the clarification that Kevin brought as far as how the numbers of conservation permits were figured out. I think it cleared up some conceptual problems that would have hurt the program if they hadn't been cleared up. So,
Central Region, Fred.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't take the time to explain the details of the two motions that came from the region, because I think from a reading of the minutes, you will understand the reasoning for those motions. Also, to indicate that Carl Hurst, who was the instigator of those motions, wanted to be here today to explain to the board basically why he made those motions and his recommendations for a change in the tables. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to be here today, but I think, again, a reading of the minutes will indicate the rationale behind that. Having said that, there was a motion to accept the recommendations, except that a minimum of 5% and 10% would be maintained, and that a table would be adopted to make it more visible that reflects those maximum percentages. Briefly, the current system now does allow for rounding, which means that in some cases, the number of permits exceeds the 5% and 10% rule. This was an effort on behalf of Carl to put into rule that permits could not exceed those 5% and 10% rules. Having made that motion, it did fail by a number of 7-2. Then there was a second motion to accept the division's recommendations for Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep and Desert Bighorn Sheep, so that those could exceed the 10% rule and there would be no reductions in the number of permits, but that there would be a hard and fast 5% limit to all other conservation species, and the rule accepted the balance of the recommendations. That motion actually passed 7-2. Then there was a third motion that asked that an annual report be published in reference to the conservation program that lists from start to finish, one, how the permits are allocated, two, the percentage that are allocated, and where the money goes, and what projects are accomplished with that money. That motion actually passed unanimously.
Thank you. Northeast Region, Boyd?
The conservation permit rule amendments were accepted as presented and passed unanimously.
And the Northern Region, Rob?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had three motions on this agenda item. The first motion was to exclude the general deer permits from the conservation permit program. That passed unanimously. Second motion was to remove the sentences that have the percentage and number restrictions and to insert the table for sheep and the remaining species. And the third motion was recommend the Wildlife Board adopt the remainder of the conservation permit rule amendments, R657-41, as presented.
Thank you. Okay, we're open to the public comment at this point. And if you are the representative for a recognized group, we'll afford you 5 minutes for your presentation. For individuals, we'll hold you to a 3-minute limit, please. So I've got maybe 5-6 of these cards handed in, and I'll call people in the order we receive them. So to start with, Mr. Ty Bolter, and you are representing Utah Wildlife Cooperative.
United Wildlife Cooperative.
Pardon me.
Pardoned. I appreciate the opportunity again to address you guys. You do a lot for our wildlife, and it's a big job, and so I truly do appreciate it. In society, we have rules and structure to protect our citizenry and their possessions, essentially from human nature, what human beings tend to do when unsupervised, left to their own devices. And just like these possessions I'm talking about, our tags have a market value. And we were over-allocated more or less, 40 to 50 tags this year. And if my math serves me correctly, on the average sales price of these tags, we're looking at $250,000 to $300,000. if Greg or Alan or Mr. Bear or Mr. Perkins walked into a 7-Eleven and walked out with a candy bar, there'd be some repercussion for doing so. The concern I have is not that this happened. Things happen. Where's the recourse? What do we do when things like this do happen? And where's the leverage to make sure they don't happen in the future? I think we should seriously take a look at the rules we have in place, but also what happens when we are in violation. If you walked out of 7-Eleven with $300,000, you'd certainly get a little bit of a slap on the wrist. So I really think we need to take a look at and have, you know, oversight and some things in place that carry some weight so we don't have these types of things happen in the future. I understand mistakes happen, but also we need to have things in place that make it a little more make us a little more conscious to make sure these mistakes don't happen again, or that they minimize those. United Wildlife Cooperative supports whatever you come up with to keep those allocations under those 5 and 10% rule. I understand sheep is a different critter. It's relative to the tag allocations, and in order for us to fund that program, we probably need to have some leeway there. But on all other species, once in a lifetime and limited entry, United Wildlife Cooperative recommends that we, whether it's a table, whether it's a straight percentage, that we create structure that keeps those percentages, you know, those tags under 5%. It looks like the only thing that would have to happen, as Carl Hurst has pointed out, is to move that one tag for the first 11 tags in the unit to 20. But again, whatever it takes to keep us under those percentages, we recommend that you do that. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you. The next presenter then, Mr. Troy Justinson, and I understand you are representing both SFW and FNAWS.
Yeah, Troy Justinson, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife and Utah FNAWS. Both Byron and Ryan are tending to some family problems. Ryan's wife's in the hospital having surgery, and Byron's grandson has some medical issues. So appreciate the opportunity to address the board. First off, I'd like to thank the division for losing my number and not calling me and telling me I didn't draw a Henry's tag. So I did draw it. But as far as SFW goes, I've attended all the RAC meetings, and some things have come to light as the RAC meetings progressed. And as far as our stance on this, is that we would support and ask the division to come up with a table that clarifies the tag allocation, and that the once in a lifetime and limited entry be allocated based on the table, not to exceed the 5% rule. The one exception we like is the sheep. We'd ask the board and the division to come up with a table that would carry what we are currently issuing as far as sheep permits goes. I think Carl figured it out, and right now he figured we're given about 13%, which exceeds the 10%. We all know the importance of the sheep program and what that money does for our sheep programs. We'd ask the division to come with a table that reflects the current number of permits we're giving away. We support what the division has recommended as far as being able to adjust on the fly with once-in-a-lifetime permits, as far as the tag numbers go down, that we adjust the number of conservation permits. We'd also just suggest that it be carried throughout elk and other species rather than once-in-a-lifetime. And then we also support that we don't include any general season permits within the conservation permit rule. I think Ernie's come up with a table that's similar to what Eric Christensen proposed as far as a table of percentages, or somebody within the board. But Eric and Carl Hurst have submitted a table, and we'd ask that you would adopt something along those lines to clarify, you know, those permits. Appreciate it.
The next comment then, thank you, Troy. The next comment then from Mr. Jason Hawkins.
Morning. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm a lifelong resident and an avid sportsman here in the state of Utah, and I'm here representing myself, but I think that my views reflect the views of many of the average sportsmen that are out there that have the opportunity to hunt and fish and enjoy the outdoors here in the state of Utah. Several months ago, I heard, as we were kind of talking and about wildlife issues, that the state may have been issuing conservation permits in excess of the 5% and the 10% caps in the conservation permit program. And as I started looking into this, I heard rumors that there was going to be an amendment to the rule. And as you can imagine, I assumed that the amendment would be to clarify the rule to make sure the caps were clear so they weren't violated. And when I attended the Central RAC meeting and gathered the materials to look at that, I was disappointed to see that the amendment was actually going to authorize the prior conduct to allow these allocations of tags well in excess of the 5 and 10% caps that are in the current version of the rule. I would submit, just as has been stated by other people, those caps should be hard caps. They should be maintained. They should be spelled out clearly. The proposed language that's being considered by the board today, the table is in direct conflict with those caps. If you look at the tables there, they are in far in excess. Depending on the number of permits that are out there, you could have as high as 20% of the sheep permits on any units going to conservation permits, and as high as 9% of other species could go, and that's well in excess of the 20%. And so I would once again reiterate that I think there should be hard caps in place. They should be spelled out clearly, whatever the board needs to do to make that happen. I also appreciated Mr. Baer's comments and some of the others that I think the language that allows the state to step in and reduce the number of permits if the public suffers a reduce due to herd numbers decreases, that should apply to all species, not just once-in-a-lifetime species. I would submit that the language there should be mandatory. If the public takes a haircut on tags because the herds aren't doing well, conservation permits should be reduced accordingly. There shouldn't be preferential treatment for any group, and we should all be treated equally. I'd also like to add that in attending the Central RAC meeting, I appreciated what Mr. Hurst did in his presentation. I think his suggestion to have an annual report that shows what money was raised, where it was spent, the projects that were funded, any money that's carried over to the following year, that would be very helpful. I think many good projects are done with this program, through the conservation permit program, the money that's raised therefrom. But I think there should be more transparency and disclosure, and there should be some rules in place. And the state should understand what those rules are, the division, we should follow those rules. And I think it's unacceptable to say we didn't understand what the rule was, we hadn't looked at the rules, we were surprised that what we were doing wasn't consistent with what's in the rule in the administrative code. We need to understand what those are and comply with them. And in closing, just appreciate everything you guys do and hope that we can maintain those hard caps. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Last card that I have, if anyone else wants to speak, you better get a card in quickly. Mr. Miles Moretti, representing Mule Deer Foundation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Wildlife Board. It's interesting, some of the questions that were asked earlier, there are not a lot of us that have the history with the conservation permit program, but I can remember this meeting in the mid-90s in Moab when we made the 10% cap for bighorn sheep, and I can tell you, as a regional supervisor at the time, we wouldn't have had a bighorn sheep program in the southeast region if they wouldn't have raised that cap. That really jump-started the sheep program. And yes, we did a lot of cattle, sheep conversions to cattle in those days, but, in the last 10 years or so, because of other issues, that hasn't happened. But let me tell you, there would not be bighorn sheep in this state without the conservation permit program, so thank you for your efforts there. The Mule Deer Foundation supports the division's recommendations. We believe if a table or whatever you want to do to clarify the cap on the 5 and 10%, we support that. And we think this is a great program, and as long as it's here, we'll participate, and we'll do our best to raise as much money as we can for wildlife, all wildlife in the state of Utah. But again, we thank you for your efforts.
Thank you. With that, we've got to the point where this will be closed off to the public. It'll be opened up to the board for decisions and discussion. And I think I'd like to chunk this thing out a little bit with some of the ones that may be a little bit more obvious, get around to making motions rather than trying to make one motion that tries to cover everything in three sentences. So with that, let's open it up for discussion for just a minute and
Would anyone care to make a general comment?
I got a couple things, Mr. Chairman. First off, just as the program in general, I think it's notable that Utah has a program that raises more money and fixes more acres than what I believe is the rest of the country put together. I mean, the stuff that we're able to accomplish is remarkable, and I think that's something that we should be proud of. Obviously, there's issues that come up where we need to do a little house cleaning and fix some fences and maintain the program. The one thing that's kind of sticking out to me that I asked Kevin about is the once-in-a-lifetime permits, being able to adjust them every year. I would really like to see deer and elk included in that, and I hope that doesn't throw a big wrench in anything. But I think if it's good for the once in a lifetime tags, I mean, as a sportsman, if my home unit of the Manti that we just chopped tags on this year ends up being above the allowable percentages, you know, fair's fair. I think we ought to adjust those conservation permits also. So,
and that's fine. This question hasn't even been an issue up until this point because we were in a steady growth phase across the board. It was moose that kind of started coming down, and we realized that there was some inconsistencies there. That's bound to happen with other species over time, and so whatever the board directs us to do is what we'll do. So.
John, I just wanted to mention one thing that you need to keep in mind. Also, the number of tags on a unit, once it's above 150 or 160, depending on which table the board adopts,
and it's,
doesn't do anything. So the tags you cut on the Manti this year had zero effect.
Because we're over 400. Because we're at 8. I understand that, yeah.
And almost all of the reductions, that's why elk is so stable, is because almost all the units are getting above that number that generates 8 maximum tags. And so the one that's affected the most is sheep and moose, because we have very few permits, and those species are real susceptible to something bad happening to them in one year that would really affect those numbers. And I think that's part of the reason why we wanted to make that adjustment with once-in-a-lifetime species.
They're more likely.
I mean,
to have,
even
to show
the year that we had to cut back a lot on Parker Mountain because of pronghorn, we never dropped below the 8 tag number, and you can put that in the rule, but it really won't be used very much for those other.
And
species.
I can understand what you're saying. I still think it's the right thing to do to have it in the rule, even if it never gets used. I would think that to make the rule equitable and to do the right thing, I think it needs to be in there. So.
Two thoughts. First off, in addition to your comment on the habitat and other outstanding work that we've been able to do because of this program and our Habitat Council funds and other partners, I think it's also important to note that this has allowed us to have about the highest percentage of permits and opportunity for our state sportsmen that any state enjoys. These very few permits bring in the kind of money that allows us to severely restrict non-resident opportunity, and all of that operates to the benefit of our citizens. So that's another huge, huge benefit that we derive from the conservation permit program. And then as a second thought, I'm inclined to agree on all the other species in addition to once in a lifetime, as you suggested. However, I believe it's going to be a little bit more difficult to do based on the timing of when we find out that there may be a decrease in permits and the obligations that the organizations may have already incurred.
There would likely be a time lag
in that.
It may not be able to happen in a month or 2 months, and it could, in fact, be delayed to the following year, I think, because it would be too late. But it could be done. With that, other comments or discussion? Bill?
One of the things that has occurred to me over time is, as a business person, would be of the $75 million and such that's been invested in habitat improvement projects, I wish there were a way we could determine an ROI on that money. Over the years, we've all talked about how deer have not responded, and they have not come back, and yet there's been a ton of money spent in improving habitat, particularly aimed at deer. We're going to start a new coyote program this year to try to help that again in future years. I wish there would be some way you could try to track some of this work to see if the effort that's being expended and the money spent is actually returning investment, or should there be some other way of it being targeted, some other way to make improvements that perhaps aren't necessarily being recognized or seen today.
And Bill, I think that can be done, but it'll be done over long time periods. A lot of the habitat work is 5, 10, 15, 20 years out before you see the maximum benefits on those, on that work. And so we're only 5 years into it. The main benefits are still on the horizon.
I think I'd like to ask Tyler to step up to the mic for 1 second and talk a little bit about project monitoring and feedback and what's been done over the last couple of years.
Tyler Thompson, I'm the Habitat Conservation Coordinator here. I apologize for not being in uniform. I didn't expect to have to speak. We do have a comprehensive monitoring program. Most of that is directed at the actual vegetation response. We took a stab at a wildlife monitoring program. We stumbled a little bit on that, and we're kind of looking at ways to come back and look at that. So that is one of our priorities, is to try to look at that return on investment, try to find, you know, those areas that we're being successful and how we can develop better projects and do better in other areas.
And that is that was developed in the last several years.
Correct.
Thank you. Further discussion? Jake?
Just a question for Kevin. When you came out of the auditing process, did they have a list of things that they wanted you to correct besides their statement there? Or was there any other?
No. They had no recommended changes, nothing specific, saying, this is an issue, that is an issue. It was the statement that I read was essentially the result of the audit.
Anything further? I'm going to deviate a little bit from the norm here, and I'll be making a comment, but I'll then stay out of the voting. I've been working for weeks trying to develop something that resolves some of these conflicts and public perceptions that have developed, and thought I was going to be sitting in the next seat and would be free to talk, and I'm not in that position. So I developed an alternative proposal, and I'm quite surprised Troy had even heard about it. But I guess in this electronic age, things move quicker than you expect. And I sympathize with ex-Governor Romney on his email getting hacked, and I guess I've learned my lesson again. But with that, I developed a proposal that would basically use the tables, recognize that rounding to the nearest whole permit could occur, and then would impose a review of the total number of permits based on a 5 and 10% rule, and would then reduce permits if that was exceeded, rounded to the next whole permit. I distributed that to the board yesterday, and because of some illnesses and some vacation time, this has not been able to go through a normal discussion period smoothly. so that this may get a little bit rocky, and I apologize for that, but things just didn't work out as well as they should have in getting it all discussed and taken care of ahead of time. So with that, the 10% rule in sheep would be accorded, and the 5% rule in deer would be in rule and also accorded as a follow-on to use of the table. In doing that, I asked the division if they would please run a set of comparisons on this coming year's permits based on the numbers that were just passed at the board at our last meeting, and they have done so. They ran three sets of figures. One would be the hard 5% rule period. One would be the proposed table that was developed, and the last one would be using the table and then doing a calculation at the end with the 5 and 10% rule figure, rounding to the nearest permit. And in running that table, the only thing that would change from the division proposal by adding that 5 and 10% for the coming year would be one deer permit. All other permits would remain the same. So I would like to propose that we retain that 5 and 10% as I proposed to the board members as a matter of transparency to the public and in order to do that in a very, very transparent manner that does not exceed 5% rounded or 10% rounded on the other species. I also proposed in there a methodology or a reduction method on the other species beyond the once-in-a-lifetime species, but that's already been addressed by John, and how that's done. It's a separate topic, and I don't care how it gets done, but I agree with John that that ought to be part of this, too. So I'll shut up. Any further discussion? Alan?
I've tried for years to hand this program off to someone else, and Kevin's doing really well to take it on, but I haven't been involved quite as long as Miles, but probably in the details maybe more than anybody as far as looking at it since the about 1998 is when I first started kind of doing that as the wildlife section chief. And one of the things, it's interesting how history gets reinterpreted by those of us that live now. And I find statements being made that absolutely aren't true, but people didn't work with it then, so they didn't know what was going on. It's interesting that the 1999 rule, and anybody would like to see it during a break, I'll show it to them, actually had three ways to determine the permits, all of which were contradictory. And so that was the rule I inherited when I started the program. It had a table that went from 1 to 9 permits. It had a strong statement that said 5%, but the table actually was a 2.5% table. Or, excuse me, the other direction around. It was a 15% table, even though it said 5%. So you had, and then the final thing said, then the Wildlife Board can do anything they want. And that was the third criteria that was in there. So we kind of started with that history. And the reason there's been so many rule changes that Kevin presented is we've tried to tighten it down. Every time we go through this process, we've tried to define it stronger and stronger. And this year, when Kevin and I discussed what to put in the rule, we said, let's put a table in. And then there can be no question how it's calculated. It's always been rounded. Whether people like that or not, or whether they believe that's interpreting maximum or not, it's always been rounded. In the same way that we round permits that says we'll have no more than 10% of permits go to non-residents, but that's always been rounded. And so it's just the way it was done. I don't think it was a misreading of the rule. I think it was known that that's what was going on, but it certainly could be changed. And so I think the division's intent is to have something that's absolutely clear. My concern, and Ernie and I have had a long discussion about that, I'm not sure that the language that adds makes it completely clear even yet. I think that if people want it to be a hard 5% on individual units, then let's just put that table in the rule. Let's forget percentages. Let's put a table in, and it just calculates the amount, and that's fine. You know, that's actually how we've done it. We've had a table every year. I have the old tables. If anybody wants to see them, I can show them. You know, we didn't go in and say, let's give one more permit here or one less there. We had an absolute table that included rounding, and that's how we did it. But so I think if the board wants to, what I would encourage you to do is just adopt. If you want it to be 5% maximum, no rounding, then adopt the table that reflects that. So it would begin, no permit would be issued until you had 20 on the 5% and do that. And I think that will remove the concerns in that area. I have a prediction that in 3 years, when we go through this review again, and we do it every 3 years because of the 3-year permit allocation, there'll be a whole new set of concerns that come up about it. And I understand that. So, but I think that's the way to handle it, as opposed to have something that someone like Kevin in a year or two is going to have to sit down and say, now what does that mean? You know, so I think that's where we're at. As far as the change of reflecting all species, I think that can be done. The reason I'm a little hesitant on it, we have the same concern that comes up. We have catch-up. Catch-up occurs every 3 years because every 3 years we use whatever the most recent year is. And we don't add permits during the 3-year process when the board issues more permits. You know, it's we just say, let's take a snapshot in time. Let's use what the permits were. I think we see with moose that it's way more volatile than it's ever been. And so I can understand with the once in a lifetimes. I think we can do it with the others if the board would like us to do it with the others. But I don't think it's necessary or would make much difference. Again, because a lot of those hunts are above that 150 or 160 number and won't make any difference. But again, we can word it to do that. It won't create a huge problem for us. We have been asked the question, what dollar difference does it make? Kevin already answered that question with sheep. On other permits, based on the last year's numbers, it's about $110,000 less that it would generate for the conservation permit program using last year's return on permit numbers. And we did it on an average by species, so we didn't look at each individual permit. So that's the kind of difference, not a huge difference in that size program. Program's very good in what it does. We've accomplished a whole lot of things, and the thing I always like to say when I talk about it is not a dollar of that program goes to salaries. We don't use any of that money to support overhead of the division or anything else. That money is entirely devoted to programs that we couldn't fund any other way. So that's why that money, that's why you hear the division defend that money so important, as being so important. So anyway, that's where we're at on the thing, and I just wanted to give a little bit of the history. I had a much longer history written, but I'll cut it short. Stacy will throw me out if not.
Alan.
And you can live with that. Let me get one in here. You can live with that on goat and moose?
Live with?
Have very limited numbers. It would make a difference of a couple.
Yeah, so if the board's interested, I could walk through what the differences are on each species in terms of this.
This is serious talk. I think it would be worthwhile.
Okay, on as Ernie mentioned, so a hard 5% rule versus using the table for deer makes a difference of one tag. 40 tags using a hard 5%, 41 tags if we apply the proposed table. On elk, it makes a 5-tag difference, 106 tags using a hard 5% rule, 111 tags using the proposed table. On Rocky Mountain goats, on mountain goats, it makes a difference of 2, but it's a higher percentage, a difference of 6 using a hard 5% or 8 using the proposed table. On moose, it's a difference of 1 tag, but it's a 50% increase. From 1 conservation permit tag based on last year's numbers to 2 using the table.
And then pronghorn is where it probably makes the largest difference. And the reason is we have a lot of pronghorn units that are in that 11 to 20 range. And so that's where you see a difference. And so with pronghorn, a hard 5% rule comes to 25. Using the table, it comes to 34, so a difference of 9 tags. And that's just a result of the nature of our pronghorn units are just kind of generating tags in that range where the biggest difference comes. So if that helps you make your decision, as Alan said, we will implement the program with whatever rules and stipulations are placed on it and do our very best to be completely forthright about it. So,
Dale?
Yeah, Alan, you said the difference in dollars was just over $100,000?
About it. Again, we didn't get in a huge amount of detail, but we determined the average price that a pronghorn permit brings, that a moose permit and so on, and it's about $110,000 reduction is what it is.
Okay.
So that's excludes sheep. If you assume a one tag reduction on sheep, it becomes about $200,000 total. So
yeah. Let me just make a comment then. Just knowing what little bit I do from the board, I think I have been involved with organizations that sell these conservation permits or whatever. I'm an absolute advocate, strong advocate of that happening, because I'm convinced over the many years that I've been involved that sale of that one tag or 10 tags, whatever it is, has done more good for wildlife in the state of Utah than any other way we have of marketing that tag. We go to the other states and we visit with them, and they're amazed at what Utah has done and is still doing. It's because of those tags. For the sake of $100,000, I'd rather see that $100,000 go to the conservation permit, because in the end, the state is going to win because of it. My experience, and just watching that since about 2000, which is 11, 12 years, I'm just convinced that we, as sportsmen to the state of Utah, benefit from the sale of those tags. End of commentary.
Got one question, not necessarily relating to numbers, but back to dollars. When those tags are sold, the division gets how much of that, and the conservation group gets how much?
Okay, 30% of it comes immediately back to the division.
30%.
30%. 10% or 50% comes back to us. I've got those off. 60% comes back to us through the groups, through projects that we both agree on are good projects. 10% the conservation organizations keep for administrative costs. Now, there are some of the groups that have waived and have just sent the whole 70% back and not retained to the 10%. For administrative costs, but there is some cost associated with marketing and everything else, and so that's where that 10% is meant to go. So 90% of it goes back on the ground is the bottom line.
Okay, either through the division or through the conservation group, 90%. And then the conservation group can elect to keep up to 10% for their administrative costs.
And they cannot contribute to any project that we don't approve, even with their 60%.
They can't go out and do their own project.
Can't go out and do their own thing.
They have to run it through you.
Yeah, we have to approve it.
So to simplify that, out of a $100,000 tag,
$90,000 goes on.
$90,000 is going to the wildlife in the state of Utah.
Correct.
Benefiting each and every sportsman.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, just looking at these numbers, when we talk about the pronghorn, there's 9 permits we're cutting. Or that would be, I wouldn't say that we're cutting, that would go back into the public draw. And then there's 1 moose permit and 3 goat permits. Those 3 goat permits are probably worth...
2.
Or 2 goat permits, sorry. Between the moose and the 2 goat permits, that's probably worth... you'd probably average $10,000 a piece on those. And on the pronghorn permits, if you was to add up the dollar amount for all those pronghorn permits, you may not reach that $30,000. Just to kind of put that in perspective, those 3 permits are probably worth more than those other 9. put together. So, not that that, I mean, just to make a note there.
Further comments?
Just a question for Alan to answer the gentleman who got up and spoke. Is there an annual report that comes out that shows where these dollars are spent and how many dollars and what it is, or is that on a three-year basis also?
There has not been an annual report for a few years. There used to be. It's one of those things that fell by the wayside. We actually are working on it, having it on our website and reporting. It's something that we're going to do. The board can certainly make that motion, but we're already, Kevin's already in the process of having that report be developed. Tyler, we have a database, so we can, it's easy to track all of the projects that conservation permits go into, Jake, now with the database that we have. So that report will be done. If the board would like to include that in the motion, that's fine. But it's going to happen no matter what.
Sorry, is that something that we could add to the action log rather than have it as part of the motion? Is it something that we could review when those figures become available?
Sure.
I don't know if that's a benefit to have it as part of the motion or not, or whether it's something that could be done.
And just to clarify with Jake, one thing that does happen every year is an audit of the funds. What the second part of that, where exactly in terms of which projects and how much went to projects versus research, there's some additional detail that would go in a report. But there is an audit of the funds that happens on an annual basis in terms of are the groups playing by the rules? Are we getting the 90% or the 90% back and putting it on the ground? That does happen on an annual basis.
Kevin, I'm glad you brought that up. I have people ask me all the time, well, where does the money go? What do you do with it? You know, and that, in my mind, that's the most accounted for money on the planet. I mean, it's very well looked after and accounted for. One thing I would like to see that I've talked to Jim when he sits next to me, is that I want to be able to get on the website and see pictures of what a conservation project looks like. What is that money doing on the ground? A before and an after. And a lot of people say, well, we're doing habitat work. We're doing conservation projects. I want to be able to look on the website and see what that is so I know where my money's going. And I would like to see that included. You know, a picture of such and such project. Here's a picture of it. Here's the dollars spent. It's a little more education on the program.
And that's available now through the database. It's more difficult to get to and find. It's probably not you're not just going to click through the website and get there, but you can get access to that. But if any time of an annual report that was done, certainly it would be a summary. There's hundreds of projects that are done every year. We're not going to document this amount
not all
this
of them,
and have
but,
a picture
but
of
some
everyone.
Good general
but we'll put some examples and some pictures, and whatever reports generated would certainly be posted on, would be put on the website. So,
okay, why don't we, I think we've had enough discussion unless somebody wants to raise their hand right now. So how about we jump into some motions and try and close this down? Could we start by chunking it out? How about on the annual report? Does anyone want to make a motion on that? Don?
I'll make a motion that the division publish an annual report reviewing all the dollars spent, projects contributed to, and just a good summary of what's gone on so that we all know what the money's been spent on and what's been accomplished.
Seconded by Jake. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor? Animus?
Just some clarification. Are we free? I mean, there's certain times of the year when it makes more sense. Can we interpret that to an annual report based on there'll be some time lags, some things that are still in progress. We will produce a report on an annual basis and do it at the timing that makes the most sense.
I want you to do the report the first day of the general season deer hunt, Kevin.
Good luck. How does it feel to want, John?
Whatever you think is best, buddy.
How
about the second topic? How about the concept of having a provision for reduction of permits on all other species
when there's a crash or a change in age objectives or something.
Mr. Chairman, I brought this up. Like Alan and Kevin have said, probably with a lot of species like elk on the manti and that, you know, we're already above the number of permits. I still think, in principle, that it's the right thing to do to have that language in the rule. It may never take effect. It may never be an issue for most of the species or the units in the state, but I still think the right thing to do is to have that in there. So when people read through it and see that it's, you know, should something happen with a deer unit, one of our trophy deer units or something like that, that there are provisions there. I think it's the right thing to do. So I would make that motion that we include that not only for the once in a lifetime species, but for all the other species that we have conservation permits allocated for.
Is there a second to the motion? Seconded by Bill Fenimore. Discussion on the motion?
I have a question. Kevin, I think you raised just a little bit of a concern about that and maybe something to do with the timing of the decisions. Did I hear
that? There would be a time lag. If you look at so the groups have already marketed their tags for 2012, a lot of them prior to when you guys met in May to make a decision. And so there'd be, in a lot of cases, there would be a one-year time lag to make the adjustment just because of the timing of the marketing versus the timing of when the board approves things. So we would catch up as, you know, we'd be probably on a one-year time lag in making those adjustments.
And is that still acceptable with?
Yeah, I think so. He explained that, and I think that's fine. I mean, there's always
right, and that comes because most of the permits are issued on a 3-year basis, and so that gives the group some opportunity to know kind of what they have going forward, and so they're going to have to be willing to adjust as well as we, based on that time lag. It'll take some additional accounting and tracking, but not anything that's can't be done. So
John, your motion is that it just allows the division. It's not a hard, well, it's a hard number unless they think that, hey, you know what, we've got an issue coming up here. We want to decrease that. And that just gives the division some flexibility to reduce those numbers.
Yeah, I mean,
based on, hey, you know what, we've got some issues here and half the herd's gone. We want to cut the numbers back.
All the deer run away on the henries.
It kind of makes it brings some equity to if the public tags are taking or is there a reduction in public tags, and there should be. We should evaluate, is it out of proportion with the conservation tags based on a recommended reduction in the number of public tags.
So if everybody else is taking a reduction, this would take a reduction.
That's
also.
I think that's the concept that okay. This is putting into the rule.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay, let's move on. How about we take sheep? Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Motion and a second. All in favor? Carries unanimous. And let's move on to the sheep for the next topic then. How about we take that one individually?
The sheep program, like has been stated, Mr. Chairman, is such a I would say, the example of how conservation permit dollars translates into public opportunity. When you look, and I appreciate Miles bringing this up when he was up here speaking. I wish he'd come visit us and speak more often. But when the sheep program really does rely on these dollars, and I know that's not, you know, we've talked about that at length. I don't think it's a good idea to adopt anything that's going to cut sheep tags from the program. I think, first off, we can see the good it's doing. There's no guess as to what's been accomplished there. Second off, like I said, if you cut one or two sheep tags, you're cutting a huge percentage away from that program. And sheep are the one species where I would say whatever we got to do to keep the number of permits that we're selling, let's keep the number of permits that we're selling.
So then, and that was a motion, and I think the motion was...
That was more that just an opinion.
You want to make the motion then?
I'd wait and see if anybody else had anything to say about that. I mean, if they don't, then
Well, that extra money has been very helpful for many, many years. And I remember as a graduate student, and I hate to say how long ago it was, but it was 1981 when the first high bid permit was offered and brought in $20,000. And then I was able to assist the division in three succeeding years in spending that, hopefully, but actually helping to guide those high bid hunters down in southeastern Utah. And that $20,000 a year that came in for a few years and then eventually maybe $30,000 was very beneficial. And the survey work was absolutely critical. And I think back in those days, and Darris can correct me if I'm wrong, and Bill, $400 an hour was helicopter time, $350 an hour. And it takes a lot of time to fly that country. $1,000 an hour is pretty expensive, and I don't know how you could, spending $6,000-$8,000 a day just to
And that's just going to go up.
So that money's very valuable, I think, to the sheep program. It helped us move sheep into the San Rafael and over across the west side of the Colorado River and other places, even back then, back in the early 80s. So.
I think, and Darris or Bill, I think, when we talk about there were two sheep populations in the southeastern region before we started, and I think there's 9 units hunted now. Is that right, Justin? And a lot of that, not all of it, but a lot of that goes directly back to our ability to move sheep is relies heavily on the money that we raise through this program. So
we're ready for a motion.
Ready,
Chairman. It looks to me like if we adopt the divisions table, or the divisions table on sheep, that would maintain the current number of sheep permits.
It would unless, I mean...
Unless things unless go sheep, in the tank, yeah, and then right. We're trimming tags permits regardless.
Go down, then it'll go down too, but it'll maintain the way we've been calculating it, or been determining
could
it.
Could we amend that to the division's recommendations so that would include rounding and...
The table has that
built in. That's fair.
Just for the sheep, though. Just for the sheep.
Recommendations and yes. Table for sheep.
Yes. So my motion would be that we adopt the division's recommendation and table just for the sheep, not for any other species, but just for the sheep.
Jake,
just a clarification: is there anything else that's on your list that needs to be voted on singly, or if we did adopt a division's remainder, would that do the motion?
I think we ought to do the sheep, all other species next after the sheep.
And then we're done.
And then do just a remainder of the division's recommendations just to clean up anything that might not be there. So we have a motion.
I'll second the motion.
Seconded by Mike. Any discussion? All in favor? Carries unanimous. Okay, how about all other species then? Got 4 ideas floating.
I've said a lot. I'm going to wait for somebody else on this.
So, Ernie, on your chart here, what's the other 4 species you're talking about then?
The other 4 species?
Hmm. Four different proposals or ideas, Jake.
Four different
species.
Proposals. You have the hard 5%. You've got the divisions table. You have my proposal of a table, the divisions table, with a 5% cap on the end of it.
Kind of a post hoc analysis.
And then you have...
Those are the only 3.
That's right. That's the only 3 because Alan came back with the hard 5%.
Ernie, would you just go through your proposal one more time and tell us how that's different from the division's proposal? I'm a little dense here this morning.
Let me use elk as an example then. Is that a fair example?
Yeah. All right. I did the calculations if you'd like me to walk through what that means.
Thank you.
The difference between the hard 5% and my proposal would probably be 5 permits on elk and 1 permit here and there, a couple of permits on deer.
Okay. So let's look at deer because that's the only place where it makes a difference. So what Ernie's proposal would do is after we're done, we'd go back to what the total number of deer permits are and what's 5% of that number. And is the number of conservation permits that we've issued, does it exceed that 5% number? With one caveat, the units that are over the 151, to make the calculation, we bring them back to 151 so that they're not overwhelming the 5%. And so the difference that that makes, it makes a difference of for deer, the limited total is 796 tags. 5% of that is 40. Okay, 40 tags. The proposed table would allow 41 permits. So we would then have to go back and according to Ernie's proposal, you would then take the lowest value deer tag of those 41 and eliminate that to bring it back to 40. Is that a fair description?
Would in effect be the same number as the hard 5%.
How would you determine what the lowest value deer tag is, just by what they sold for last year?
We do that every year. We have a value that's part of the program. What that's going to do, we are going to have to look at that a little bit closer.
Yeah, you're
because
right.
The rule also outlines, you know, the first tag is this kind, the second tag is this kind, and it lays out the weapon types and seasons for each of those
so
tags.
So just use like the value that you have when the groups bid on them. Each tag has a certain dollar value that they bid. Just use that same
type.
Okay.
What if you have several that are at the bottom? They're tied. They're all the same value.
Then it would be just a decision we'd have to make on which one. It does complicate things. And I think that's Alan's main concern, is adding additional complexity to something that's already fairly complex when it only makes a difference of one versus the proposed table. That's what you guys need to decide, is having that in there. If that adds enough clarity, if it adds the assurance that justifies the added complexity for a difference of one tag over a total of, several hundred or around 200 when you add all the species together. So,
and jump to the pronghorn, please.
Oh, I got so many papers here now. With pronghorn, doesn't make any difference using your rule versus the table.
In other words, the 9 permits that would be cut with a hard 5% would be restored with my rule.
Yes, your rule will allow for a total of 37 pronghorn tags. The proposed table would calculate 34. The hard 5% would calculate 25. So.
Hey, there's no easy answer. Somebody want to jump?
I got to be honest, Ernie. I don't hate your proposal here. I'm going to slide over away from Alan as I say that. I can hear him growling a little bit. But, I think as I've listened to the public and talked to guys all the time, that I'm sure all of us do, about these different kind of programs, if we could go back and at the end of the day say, there's not more than 5%.
In an actuality, it's much less than 5%, because if you did take all of the elk tags and all the deer tags with the units that have 500 of them, it comes down to 2 or 3%.
Sure, and like you said, if you take the ones that are limited by number of permits.
And I interpreted Ernie's thing, I think maybe a little I'm not sure how he intended it, but when he said eliminate the units that are over 150, what I did is I truncated them at 151 and kept them in the calculation. I thought that was the clearest way to do it, so.
Am I the only one with an opinion today, or what?
I've got somebody next to me that never gets to make a motion, and you're hesitating, so I'd like to recognize Dell with your permission.
I would love to hear Dell make a motion.
Well, I'd make a motion from what I'm hearing that we go with. There's not a whole lot of difference between Ernie's proposal and the DWR's proposal. I make a motion that we accept the DWR's proposal, and partly because that's what the public has already seen and looked at, and they've had an opportunity to digest that and comment and review and vote on it.
So but to be fair to them, they had some concerns over it as well.
Yes, they did.
I'll second it.
Motion made by Dell, seconded by Jake. Discussion on the motion.
So the division proposal then is to include the rounding factor in there.
And just apply that table. Between 11 and 30 permits is 1 on the 5%. Between 31 and 50 is 2. Between 51 and 70 is 3. We would just apply that table as it's in the rule.
I'm going to... as somebody that has a lot to do with the permits in a lot of different ways, and the concern that's come up with the program and the questions and things like that, I personally am not opposed to the division's proposal. I would lean more towards Ernie's proposal because I think when we say 5%, Ernie's proposal's 5%. I mean, we can say that's it. And I think it looks better. I think it is important for the program that we, make it as straightforward and cut and dried as possible. I think Ernie's does a little better job of that. So I'd probably lean that way.
See no further hands. See how the vote goes then. The proposal is to use the division's recommendations on all other species as far as permit numbers. All in favor, please signify by raising your hand. We have 5-4. Opposed?
Can I clarify?
Early.
I'm just wanting to make sure you know. I think that the other way is a little better. I'm not voting against the program or anything. I'm an avid supporter of the program. I just think the other way, I'd rather see it go that way. So I think we're choosing between A and A1 here. So.
And I said I wouldn't vote, and I won't. My feelings mirror John's. With that, then, I think we need one last motion, please, on all other species or all other portions, everything else in the recommendations on the rule.
Second.
Motion by Bill, seconded by John, to approve the remainder of the rule as presented. All in favor? Carries unanimous. We're breaking for lunch. We'll start again at 12:30.